take over from each party. Everyone had a copy.
ಶಿವ ಸಮಾರಂಭ ಶಂಕರಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಮಧ್ಯಮ ಅಸ್ಮದಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಪರ್ಯಂತ ವಂದೇ ಗುರು ಪರಂಪರಾ. ಓಂ ಸಹನಾಭವತು ಸಹನೌ ಪುನಃತು ಸಹ ವೀರ್ಯಂಕರವಾವಹೈ ತೇಜಸ್ವಿನಾವಧೀತಮಸ್ತು ಮಾ ವಿದ್ವಿಷಾವಹೈ. Some of you may have heard about a paradigm in psychology called four life positions. It's not working?
No.
It's
not
loud enough.
It's not loud enough.
Ah, Bhushan, Dev, you just see what is going on. Just tell me.
The first position is I am okay, you are not okay. Yeah. So this is not a state. It is not a phase. When we say it's a life position, we mean it's a more stable and enduring understanding of myself and the other. I think the because of the way the speaker is aligned, that's why we'll have to, let's call Nair. Can
there
you
second please? Speaker also, there's one speaker.
There are two speakers. One is there and one
that's
is here.
Put outside. Put it facing this.
Let's try that. Let's see. Oh, this is even more pronounced.
Yeah.
It's better we call him, yeah, because he's familiar with the setup. So.
Yeah, just speak on.
Is this good?
I think
no, that's not good.
Maybe some connection, huh?
No, he's so fine. Is the other mic working? They just switched, no?
We did that.
The other way then.
Just check again.
No, it's an OCR.
Tabhi theek tha.
Anything mechanical, you give it a kick and
try this.
Huh? Is that okay?
Dekho, ye wala dekho.
No.
Ye bhi karke.
Switch off and on.
Now go.
Microsoft learned from them only.
Now check.
Yeah, it's better. Okay, is this okay? I don't hear much difference. No. I don't hear much.
Yeah, difference. I think it came from
but
a
this,
bit.
This
the alignment is not.
Yeah,
it doesn't stay.
It's 2 weeks.
What shall we do? I can hold it. It's an option. I can hold it.
No, it's 2 weeks. We have to hold it, I think so.
Okay, so we can try and do that.
But is it audible, I think?
Is this good?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that becomes
so that's
standing.
Fine.
Stand.
Just think that you have to be a...
okay.
A singer.
Theek hai. So, life positions, yeah? The first position, life position, is... I am okay. You are not okay. I'm echoing also.
The part that you are not okay.
So, I am okay. This is not okay.
I think you leave it.
That comes and goes.
Okay. So, moving on, while this is being fixed, okay? So, it's quite obvious what it means. And it would be very natural. Sorry?
TV?
TV? TV? Okay.
Okay, wrong switch on. I'm okay, what to do with that?
So, I'm okay, you are not okay, if that is my life position, then it means that the way I deal with people, I might have a tendency to look down on them. Or to find fault with them because they are not okay after all. And pretty much anything and everything that I do is okay. Or I'd like to believe that. The second life position that this particular psychologist spoke about, so I'm really sorry for the echo, but this is how it is. Is I am not okay, you are okay. And so I will find fault with anything and everything that I do. No matter how much I try, how much I have achieved, I will still try and find some fault with it because my life position is that I'm not okay inherently. And then there is another life position. I'm not sure whether this person will really survive. And that position is, I am not okay.
You are not okay.
So I don't find much hope in my life. Nor do I find much hope. I cannot interact with anybody much. I try to relate, but I feel not very understood. In fact, I'm misunderstood most of the time. And so I just find the whole purpose being quite useless, quite hopeless. Now, all of us go through these phases, but it may not be life positions for us, or it may be. And the fourth life position is I am okay. You are okay. And this reminds me about this recent movie, I don't know how many saw it, Dear Zindagi. How many of you all saw that? Okay, so a kind of a minority. Still, what is very interesting about the movie is that this girl, the protagonist, she goes through repeated relationships, breakups, romantic relationships, breakups. And she lands up in therapy. And then through the process of her therapy, she figures out that she had a fear of being abandoned. And that kind of explains why she went through one relationship after another without much rhyme or reason. And she further traces it to the fact that she was left under her grandparents' care for some time. She saw it as being abandoned by her mother. She saw it that way. And in the first part of the movie, they show how she just does not want to engage with her family at all. She barely wants to even exchange pleasantries with her family. So some of it gets explained. Now, towards the end of the movie, she discovers a certain relative freedom. And that relative freedom she discovers is because she adopts this life position of I am okay, you are okay. How does she adopt that position? Because she sees that the circumstances in her life, they have all shaped her to be who she is. She is also able to see how so many forces contributed to who she is at this stage. She is able to see that her parents, especially the mother, against whom she had a lot of anger, she's able to see that the mother is also another person struggling, just as she has struggled in her life. And then, of course, the mother asks for forgiveness, and you know, there is an attempt at reconciliation, there is an attempt at everything being okay with the relationship with the mother. And it is to this life position that Vedanta is addressed to. A person who has this life position that I am okay, that while I may be struggling, I am a person. The other person, whoever that other is in my world, work-wise, family-wise, wherever, any person I interact with, that person is more or less okay. I am okay, the other person is okay, and therefore, the values that are important to me are as important to that person. If I want justice to be done to me, then surely that person also wants justice. If love and compassion is important to me, if that's how I want to be treated, then the other person also wants that. There is no question of me being selective here. And so this person, who now more or less has this life position, that I am okay, you are okay. And like Swamiji was saying earlier in the day, but still something's not okay. You know, everything's okay. I'm living a really good dharmika life. I'm following all the values. And then sometimes others don't follow values, but it's okay. So more or less I'm managing. But still, something's missing. To this person who has discovered some mumukshutva, has discovered something's incomplete and that there is a solution to this. The solution does not lie in me doing more of what I was doing or doing it differently. The solution lies in what is my position, what is my life perspective, what is my vision of my life, what is my vision of myself. Then because I am relating to people, I am relating to the world, then naturally questions will come up in terms of who or what accounts for what I am experiencing. And given that this adhikari, because really speaking, this person who is saying I'm okay has utilized and is utilizing the three shaktis that the person is endowed with. So jnana shakti, the capacity to know, in terms of being able to think clearly. So if I don't know something, then I will know it in time, or I will find out. But the person does not go back to the position of, oh, I don't know, I'm not okay. Other people know so much, but I'm not okay. Person doesn't do that. I'm okay, I will find out whatever I need to know, because buddhi has been given to me. And Bhagavan Krishna in the Gita refers to himself as a kripanaha, a miser. And the most beautiful definition of miser is given in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Asmad lokat preti, the one who is living in this world but dies away, na viditva, does not know himself, is really a kripanaha. So, what is the connection with knowing oneself and being a miser? Miser is the one who has a lot but doesn't want to spend. So the miser has been gifted with jnana shakti, has been gifted so much buddhi, but thinks I am buddhu, and so therefore buddhi is not utilized. So buddhiman thinks that he is buddhuman. So then who can help such a person? But jnana shakti. So the one who says I am okay knows how to think and thinks clearly. And suppose if my thinking is muddled, then I will try and still focus on thinking clearly, thinking objectively. That's not all. I have a lot of desires. So ichha shakti. Ichha shakti, the capacity to desire, to want, to wish, all of that given to me. And so I don't hold back. Whatever I want, whatever I wish, really speaking, the world is my playground. All out for whatever I want to achieve, whatever I wish for. I'm okay person will have utilized and is concurrently utilizing this shakti that has been blessed, you know, that Bhagwan has blessed this person with. And of course, we are not solar batteries operating, we have been given hands and legs. Kriya Shakti, the capacity to act on our desires, on what we know, to take an idea and conceptualize it into a magnificent project, all of that is possible only because of Kriya Shakti, the capacity to act. So this person who says I'm okay is the one who doesn't hold back on any of these shaktis, because everybody has been endowed with these shaktis. And this person is an adhikari for Vedanta. What Swamiji was referring to, in other words, the one who thinks clearly, because the person has claimed one's jnana shakti, the one who feels deeply, the one who has claimed his or her ichha shakti, and the one who acts decisively, the one who has claimed his or her kriya shakti. This is the person we are talking about. And towards the end of the Gita, Bhagavan Krishna says, this teaching should not be given to the one who doesn't have tapas, like any religious discipline, who is not willing to listen, who finds fault with me, as in Bhagwan, and a bhaktaya, who does not have bhakti. Okay? So Bhagwan Krishna, at the end of the teaching, says this teaching should not be given to the one who doesn't have bhakti. So then the question arises for us, what is bhakti? So we come to that.
It's really funny.
For the second one, no, tapas, then bhakti and
who doesn't listen. Who doesn't listen, who finds fault with the teaching and Bhagwan. And there is so much that is spoken of about bhakti. And we all, given the different backgrounds we come from, we might have ideas about bhakti. When we look at the qualifications of an adhikari, bhakti is not mentioned. So why should we even bother with it? The word bhakti is not mentioned. You know, viveka, vairagya, and all the others, no? So all the six pack. So in that, samadhanam is there, shama is there, psychological resolution, resolution of the mind, physical restraint, dhamma is there, titiksha is there, endurance or putting up with pinpricks of life, of the opposites. Then uparati is there. So what is uparati?
Quietitude,
or because one does one's own dharma, so you have, you command a certain composure. Samadhanam is there, one-pointedness, and Shraddha. The word Shraddha is there. So the word Shraddha, Guru Vedanta Vakyeshu Vishwasaha iti Shraddha. So the trust pending further understanding in the words of Vedanta, and of course whatever the Guru says is nothing else but Vedanta. So in the Vakya, in the teaching, in the Upadesha, there is Shraddha. Now, we'll see, you know, when we look at the first sutra, it ends with Vyakhya Syamaha. Okay, we are still not entering it, but I'm just telling you. So grammatically, it means we are saying. Okay? It's not I. It's not, oh, the Shastra says or my Guru says, that's why I'm saying it. We are saying this. And it's a very telling verb to use. Because when we say we mean this is what the Rishis say. This is what the Veda says. We have nothing new to add. And so it is our Shraddha to the tradition. And in fact, Narada, you know, Naram Jnanam Dadati Iti Naradaha, the one who gives Naram Jnanam, anyway, I'll come to that later. I'll tell you, you know, in more detail. So, I mean, look at the beauty. He's already an Advaita teacher, Acharya. He need not say Vyakhya Syamaha. He need not say, you know, we will now explain. But he does. And this Shraddha in the fact that this means of knowledge is the only thing that will help to take away this sense that I have that something's not okay with my life. And that because of that, the level of self-judgment I have, it's never ending. And that this problem, which is not a psychological problem, it is a spiritual problem. The fact that I want to be free from self-judgment, that I want to be free from the sense of limitation I experience. Because I cannot rest, I cannot settle with anything other than this. So this word Shraddha, in some ways, means bhakti. Because how can I have Vishwasaha, how can I have trust in the words of the Guru? I could have some trust, working trust, because I know that the Guru speaks the words of the Veda. Then the question is, how can I have trust in the Veda? Why should I have trust? Anyway, I have a problem with trusting people. So, nobody, I can trust fully, completely. Conditional trust is there. I'll trust my consultant with my finances. I may trust my physiotherapist with some whatever he or she is manipulating, you know. So like that, conditionally we trust. Now how and why can I or should I even trust the words of the Veda? Is a question. It's a very valid question. And it is something that we discover in time. We discover that trust because though in the vision of the Veda, I am completely secure. My experience is I'm insecure, but in the vision of the Veda, security is my middle name. I may feel insignificant, but in the vision of the Veda, I am completely significant. In fact, all that is here is me. There is nothing other than me. And so no matter how much people may love us, nobody will tell you that you are limitless. Nobody will tell you that you are the security you seek. But in this vision, this is said. And because we see the tradition of guru after guru after guru and student of, you know, because every guru has been a student once, then because of that working trust, we start to listen. And because the Veda proves itself, because the message is something that, see, I can dismiss it, right? It's like how Duryodhana, when Bhagavan Krishna appeared, in fact, he was Duryodhana. Look at his strange combination of Punya Papa. Vishwarupa, the whole magnificent form, was shown to Duryodhana. He dismissed it. He said, you know, all this is magic. You know, don't play pranks with me. So this vision of Veda that says, I am the limitless that I seek. I am free as I sit here, free from all conflict, free from having this experience of even being a human being. Because human being, mind body means conflict, some conflict or the other. That while I sit here, currently, in the present tense, I am free from all conflict. So if this Veda is providing this vision about me, then of course I want to know. And to this Adhikari that is addressed in the Gita, and of course in so many other texts, Bhagavan Krishna says, okay, if you want to know this vision of you being non-dual, there is nobody other than you, then you have two options. You have two lifestyles. Asmin loke, in this world, dvividha nishtha. Now, very interesting that the word nishtha is a singular noun. It's not dual. Okay? The goal is the same. So, nishtha meaning a lifestyle, a committed lifestyle. Committed lifestyle for what? Nishtha moksha. So the goal is one, moksha. For the ones, for the yogis, not the asana yogis, so for the karma yogis, a certain lifestyle called karma yoga, where alongside moksha, I am pursuing artha, dharma, kama, all other pursuits. And then for the jnana yogis, sankhya. So this lifestyle that is completely committed, where artha, dharma, kama is to its bare minimum, and all time attention is focused on pursuing this knowledge, moksha. So as is earlier said, that this is the scenic route, karma yoga, and jnana yoga is said, you know, jnana yoga as in this lifestyle of being a sannyasi is fast track expressway. There is no mention of anything called bhakti yoga in the Gita. You look at all the 700 verses of the Gita, there is no mention of bhakti yoga. There is a chapter called bhakti yoga, 12th chapter, and the word yoga is being referred to there as a topic. So every chapter ends with the word yoga. Yoga is topic. So this bhakti yoga is not there. But without bhakti, the karma yogi cannot have the lifestyle of karma yoga. Without bhakti, the sannyasi cannot have this lifestyle. Impossible. So then this so-called bhakti yogi, let's just assume there is a bhakti yogi. The one, you know, because so much is spoken about the paths.
Can I interrupt this way? Duryodhana is bothering me. Some Virat Swarup.
Vashun, yes. Yeah, so what about?
Duryodhana
was shown. I did not mistake, you know, Arjuna was shown only. But Duryodhana was shown before. Yes.
We have not heard, that's why.
Okay, okay. So anyway, so now you know. But of course, you might want to check and please go ahead.
Sort of probably clarified satsang or something.
Yeah, yeah. So now, bhakti yoga is not mentioned. So now, assuming that there is this creature who is a bhakti yogi, will the person do karma or not? Obviously, the person will do some karma. Karma is will-based action. And choice-based action, which only a human being can do. So bhakti yogi also has to do karma. But on the other hand, this other lifestyle of a sannyasi, who has given up Vaidika karma, a lot of Laukika karma also. So then, is the bhakti yogi sannyasi? Because, first of all, is the person doing karma? Yes. How much karma is the person doing? Maybe doing a lot of bhajan, kirtan, this, that, the other. Perhaps. The point is, karma is being done. And if we say bhakti yogi is a sannyasi, it's not correct unless the person has really taken the robes. Because if the bhakti yogi gives up karma, that means it will be a dereliction of duty. So this creature called bhakti yogi cannot exist, really speaking, because the person is really a karma yogi. Yeah, because Bhagavan Krishna very, very clear in the Gita, I don't know how people can sweep it under the carpet and create their own philosophies around it. There is nobody, no such creature called bhakti yogi. Because whatever karma the person is doing, the person may be doing with bhakti. And therefore, if the person calls himself bhakti yogi, it's okay. But really speaking, karma is being done. So maybe the attitude is what is being referred to. So this we want to be very clear about, because when we look at granthas or any texts that are especially, or we read a lot of bhakti literature, we find that people go into raptures over all kinds of things. So, oh, this Bhagwan is wearing pitambara, oh, how beautiful, wow, yellow color, and wow, matlab, look at that. So that's not the glory of Bhagwan, because he's wearing yellow silk, you know. But people get lost in that, and they will have, yo, look, and they will have tears. Just see the beauty, wow, what is this? So the glory of Bhagwan does not lie in wearing silk, yellow silk, or any such. So we want to be reminded about what Bhagwan Krishna said in terms of nishtha, that this committed lifestyle, that is there for moksha. That irrespective of whatever you're doing, however busy life you have, it's brilliant. The more busy you are, the more better it is, because you can have this lifestyle of karma yoga, the attitude with which you approach your karma. And so because I am a person who is okay, I claim all my shaktis, and therefore there is kaushalam, there is effectiveness in all my karma. The attempt is to bring effectiveness in all my karma, all in line with dharma. So that's what we are talking about in terms of karma yoga. And in terms of the results, so I mean, most of the people are exposed to this, so I'm not dwelling too much on it. And in terms of my attitude with all my situations, there is a certain acceptance. It's not an acceptance that is born of resignation or helplessness. It's a very proactive acceptance of myself and the other. And the other includes situations as well. So this is the lifestyle. To have this acceptance, I need to figure out, or I need to have some idea of Bhagwan. Because when it is being said that all the results are really all laws of Ishvara, now who is this Ishvara? Who is this Bhagavan? And what am I supposed to feel? You know, I can't feel too much. So then how to relate? How to relate to Bhagwan? Because we insult him in many ways. You know, we insult him by saying he's a higher power. We have heard this, right? So who is God? God is higher power. So because we don't want to recognize the conscious being, so higher power, let us remove the being from Bhagwan. Or is pure energy. So energy, but hello, energy is subject to change. So solar energy is available. Then whatever we have is all food energy. Then we know potential to kinetic and so on and so forth. So all energy is subject to change. But I will insult Bhagwan and say, no, the energy only. Or otherwise maybe the universe, the forces of nature, the forces of universe, slightly better. But all these are our conjectures, some ideas that we have. And really speaking, that we may have a lot of ideas, but what is it that is true to reality? Only Bhagwan has to define himself. There's no other way that we can figure out all this, although we may have many heads together. And so Bhagwan defines himself in many, many places. Coming back to the word bhakti, and actually this Narada Bhakti Sutra, you all might be exposed to the definition of a sutra. It's very brief. And it's very, very tight, okay? There is no additional letter, leave alone additional word. And so what Narada has done is he has given us 84 sutras, which goes in the name of Narada Bhakti Sutras. And as is a sutra, it's not even a verse, it's a very tight statement. We have printed only 10, I think, on the sheet given to you. It's the first part of the text. And it's the most important part of the text. So we'll see how many sutras we are able to do. Now the question is, who is this Narada? So Narada has been caricatured a lot. You know, so all of us will remember from watching TV serials or wherever. One iktara is there in his hand. He is descending from what we think as heaven, some clouds. And he says, Narayana, Narayana. Like that he says, and he goes everywhere. And he creates some fights between people. And then, so this is a little dubious character. So like that, there are lots of stories. Which Narada has written these sutras? Honestly, we don't know. Okay, because there are many stories about many Naradas. So we don't know whether it is one Narada or many. We are going with the understanding that this is Narada, the Advaita teacher. So the one like mentioned in Chandogya Upanishad, who goes to Sanat Kumara and says that, you know, I know this, I know that, etc., etc. And he gives a long list and says, but, you know, tell me something that will help me cross over my sorrow. Give me something, tell me that. And then there is teaching. So this Narada, who is now an Advaita teacher, he is the one who is writing these sutras. Writing or he has shared it with people. And Narada, we must understand as Naram Jnanam Dadati. If you want technical definition, Naram as in person, Jnanam Dadati. So the one who gives knowledge, iti Naradaha. Okay, because we don't want to think of this dubious character who is creating hangama everywhere. Okay, because you say, you know, this character, I'm not interested in what he has to say. So Narada has written about bhakti, and he titles it, the title of this thing is Bhakti Sutras. So now the question is, what exactly is bhakti? So bhakti, the word, comes from a root, bhaja. Bhaja sevayam, which means to do seva. Huh? To do seva, to do worship. And it talks about a certain relationship. Because you could do seva to yourself, but you won't call it seva. So we have to understand how it is that Narada is defining bhakti. Because that's how he begins. And before we even go into the sutras, in the Gita, Bhagwan very clearly says that there are four types of bhaktas. Okay? Four types of bhaktas. Devotee is the closest translation to a bhakta. So a person who is related to the total, that is Ishvara. So Chaturvidha Bhajante Mam, like these people, they worship me. All of them worship me. Who are these four people? Four groups. One is called the Arti. Arti. Arti as in the person who is in distress. Who is in distress. So, jabhi bhi takleef ho, you know, whoever is on your speed dial, you will reach out to that person. Yaar, Bhagwan is on speed dial. So then, takleef hai to chalo Bhagwan ko poocho, Bhagwan will do something for me. So that's the person who will always remember Bhagwan in distress. And Bhagwan says that yes, he is my bhakta, he is my devotee, no less. Of course, he thinks of me very occasionally. He relegates me to a corner in the house, and the rest of it is all his business. This is sacred time, puja time, little bit. So I don't mix spiritual. I don't mix religion with business. Rest of it is business, but thoda idhar. But idhar bhi thoda business like transaction hai, but it's okay. Second group is artharthi. The one who, for whom Bhagwan is a good accomplice in all the different pursuits. So not only do I think of Bhagwan when I'm in distress, but also in good times. Now bhi gaadi kharida hai naya, so then it's appropriate, you know, out of fear also, may you keep this in proper condition. But achha hai, let me appease Bhagwan. So I think of Bhagwan whenever all these things, and whatever I need, you know, who else will I turn to? But I will turn to Bhagwan, so Bhagwan will provide. Artharthi. Jignyasu. This person, he's not only interested in what I can get. You know, in Marathi there is a word called Kama Purti Mama. Okay, jab kaam padta hai, tabhi this person is your best, is your mama actually. Okay, unrelated but behaves like your mama. So this Arthi and Artharthi are like Kama Purti Mama. When I need, you know, Bhagwan is there. But Jignyasu is not like this. So Jignyasu is like, okay, I can get a lot of things, yeah, sure. But I am interested in knowing who you are. Because I am relating, because I am a part of the whole from the standpoint of body, mind. I am relating to the total that is you. I really want to know who you are. And so the person is involved in a committed pursuit, is a karma yogi, is a sannyasi. And then there is the fourth group who is also a bhakta, the jnani, the one who knows the truth about himself, herself. And the bhakti is such, because in the next verse he says that there is no separation between me and you. So this is what the jnani says. There is no separation between me and you, Bhagwan. And in fact, Bhagwan says in the next verse that really speaking, I am the Atma for the Arthi. I am the Atma for the Artharthi. I am the Atma for the Jignyasu. I am the Atma for the Jnani also. All four are my Bhaktas. But only the Jnani knows that there are no two Atmas, that there is no separation. All that is here is one, and that is you. The Jnani knows that. And Narada in the first sutra is really defining this kind of a relationship. What is that relationship that the jnani has with Ishvara? So very, very beautiful, because you know, a lot of times when it comes to bhakti, we just think that, oh, these people, melting people, you know, this is too much, like what is this? You know, like get a hold of yourself. So people are weeping and tears and dancing, and for some people of course enjoy it, but our dear Advaita Vedanta people, see, all this bhakti and all is not for me. But really, without bhakti, there is really no karma yoga, there is no sannyasa yoga, so to speak. There is no such lifestyle without bhakti. So when Bhagwan is saying that all four are my bhaktas, all four are devoted to me, it's a wonderful thing. Because we relate depending on what we need. And the glory of our culture is that I can decide how I want to relate. So there is Vatsalya Bhakti, I want to mother Bhagwan. So then I will feed him, I will bathe him, I will clothe him. Then I have three sets of dresses. I don't know if you all know such people, but there's a whole sampradaya that will do all this. Will wake up, sing lullabies, Vatsalya Bhakti. You want to relate to Bhagwan like you're the mother? Please. No. I want to relate like he or she is my lover. Very good. So very nice. So Nara Nari Bhakti is also there. Then of course we also talk about dasya bhakti, that whatever you say will be done. So like the bhakti that Hanuman had, you know, so you just have to indicate and it will be done. So therefore that you are the master and I am here, I am your dasa, I will do whatever needs to be done. So like that, in terms of how I want to relate to Bhagwan, there is no prescription. There is no do's and don'ts. It's not that, oh, Bhagwan is this very tough, formidable person and you cannot be personal. So for some people, they want to touch, they want to hold, they want to kiss the deity. So all that is okay. How you want to relate to Bhagwan, depending on what you need, what resonates with you, you relate. And even in that, so we have the whole worship of relating to Bhagwan as my Ishta Devata, whatever resonates with me, whoever resonates with me, because they personify certain things. Then there is also the worship of Grama Devata. So this place, Grama Devi, in Mumbai, there is a Grama Devata. When it used to be a village, a Gautan, that time this Devi was there and she was worshipped by everybody there. And then we also have a Kula Deva or Kula Devi. The form of Bhagwan that has been worshipped for generations. We may know, we may not know, but nice to know, we must find out. So all this I have access to, I can relate to Bhagwan the way I want and what I need. A lot of the people heal when they relate to Bhagwan in the way that they need. So if I feel I've lacked motherly care, a lot of people will relate to Bhagwan as Mata. Some people say, nahi, nahi, he's my Pita. Lot of healing takes place, lot of self-validation takes place. So now this relating to Bhagwan, this bhakti, Narada begins. And he begins with a very auspicious word called Atha. So Atha, the word, has few meanings. Here it means now. In Brahma Sutra, of course, it means thereafter, and people, like, I think Swamiji might have spent a half a class on that. Or maybe more. Many, many classes. So Atha, because every word in the Shastra, there is no casualness, there is no looseness in talk, in presentation, and every letter is conserved. You know, because even Shankara is saying Ardha Shlokena Pravakshami, that I don't need too many words to convey the truth. So here he starts saying, he says Atha. Atha is an auspicious word, it is an auspicious sound as well. So Mangala Suchaka. And he says, now we will expound on Vyakhya Syamaha. What is it? Atha to bhaktim. So about this bhakti, we will talk. We means he doesn't have multiple personality disorder. So like I was saying, we as in all me and all the various acharyas that have stood, you know, before me, everybody talks about bhakti in this particular way. So what is that bhakti? So he defines it and he says, sa, because bhakti is feminine, sa tu asmin para prema rupa. So prema as in love, and in this meaning pertaining to Bhagwan, this bhakti is a nature of limitless love. And the sutra, you know, this sutra literature is so amazing that an adjective is rarely ever used. So now an adjective like parama is used to define prema. So there must be a reason. What is this qualified love that Narada is speaking about. So more about that we shall see in the next class. Okay. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnam Purnamadachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Guru Namaha Hari Om. The yoga class is at 6:15 in that hall, right? In that temple place, yeah.